25 of the ReWrap podcast, where we talk about all things photo, video, and the creative lifestyle. My name is Jaron Schneider, and joining me, as always, is the Squinch Master himself, portrait and headshot photographer Karameter Gooman. And this week, we are also joined by the pride of the Northwest, incredible product and still photographer, Tony Rosland. I almost got through that without messing up, but I'm just going to keep rolling with it. It's good to have you with us, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Gents. Thanks for inviting me. Big fan of the show, so it's kind of cool to be a guest.
Tony went out and bought a microphone just for us, Karameter. He got the NT-USB. Yeah.
From Rode.
That's what I
use. This thing's huge. I had to get an extra desk just to put the microphone on. Yeah, it's ginormous.
To be honest with you, I'm running out of space on my desk with this thing. It is a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be. In the pictures, it looks like it's going to be like a little small, but no, it's not. Karaminder's sexual innuendo. we're gonna talk about a few things this week. A couple of house cleaning news sort of things, and then we're also gonna try and get some of Tony's expertise on a few issues. But first off, I want to talk a little bit about Adobe Creative Cloud and this rather incredible bug that they released in CC 2015 that they didn't...
The one we talked about like a month ago on the show?
Exactly, and the one that was discovered, and basically, we were the first news outlet to cover it, but it was discovered pretty quick by people who are using it immediately.
Did we have anyone else on the show during that time?
I think it was just you and me that week, but I was talking to the guy that I spoke to specifically about it. He's actually up in Spokane too, Chris Lambeth. Mm-hmm. And it was this like he called it the salt lines bug, where it's like when you're using the healing brush, you would actually see outlines of like white pixel dust all over your image, and it made retouching impossible. You said it was driving you crazy, Tony.
Yeah, absolutely bonkers. You do use the healing brush, it'd leave a salt trail, and then you'd have to go back and try to correct that. And it was a never-ending, infinite loop process. And I think Chris was probably the first person that brought it to my attention, too. And I was like, he's right. It is the healing brush.
Yeah, it was really annoying. And when they fixed this last week. I think it was like last Tuesday or Wednesday. There was a heck of a lot more in this bug fix release than just that. I mean, I'm looking at this list, and it's like 50 items. But what I'm most concerned about is like when we walked into the CC thing, and I personally, I don't know about you guys, but I jumped on board with Adobe CC. One of the reasons why was because it was they can fix things quickly. They can send out releases faster than ever. It took over a month to get this fixed. So I don't see how is this faster than ever.
Yeah, maybe it was a more difficult fix than we know about. I don't know what the reasoning was behind that.
I swear I see Adobe updates for Photoshop or Lightroom every like 4 days but I also have two computers that I'm trying to update between. I think I just used to seeing it all the time.
I have this...
Like right now, I'm recording, there's an update for Photoshop.
I'm not surprised. I have this weird error where, you know, if you guys are... I think you're both on Mac. Tony, you're on Mac, right?
Yeah.
You know that the Creative Cloud icon in the upper right-hand corner of the taskbar where you can access all that stuff? Mine, 100% of the time now, even if I uninstall it and reinstall it to whatever extent that I can, if I click on it just to see what's running, I just get a white screen. It never fully loads for me anymore. Getting in there and updating my apps is extremely challenging, and I don't even know if I have to. Like a couple days ago, I realized that I was still running old versions of almost everything. Because it freezes up and won't update things and won't let me even see it. So I have to go in and launch it and open it separately in order to get the stuff to appear. So it's really, really frustrating now. I feel like what's happening here is like the Salesforce problem. When Salesforce started getting bigger and bigger and going more and more to the cloud, they had this problem where their software became a rat's nest. Their code was just a mess, and it's still a mess, and they're aware of it. And everything is sort of leaning on everything else, and it's this weird broken house of cards, so that when you try and fix something, everything else kind of crumbles a little bit because there's just so much crap in there that they haven't cleaned out in a while. And that's what I get the feeling is happening with Adobe apps. It's just they're all these updates that Karameter, you just said a minute ago, you get constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're all built.
It's worse than Acrobat. Yeah. I don't know if you guys ever had Acrobat updates in the back.
Oh my God. So horrible.
I feel like I'm using a PC. It's driving me crazy.
Right? I mean, I'm on a Mac for a reason.
But it's just the Adobe apps.
For all of the PC users.
But Tony,
they're going to hate me now.
Serious question though, because Tony, you said you had that problem. What was your resolution? What did you do? Did you just try and fix it in the app or did you roll back?
for which problem are we talking about?
The salt.
I fixed it in the app, so I would have to use the healing brush. It didn't always do it. I noticed it more on the darker sections of stuff, you know, retouching architecture or surfaces mm-hmm. that had darker pixels. And then I would have to go through with like a clone stamp tool, real fine brush clone stamp tool, and try to take out the salt trails. It was just a pain in the butt.
So you'd fix something and then have to fix what you fixed.
Yeah, so I'm spending twice as much time, so I should send Adobe the bill for post-production, you know?
You should. I know that Chris Lambeth, he just straight up said no and went back to CC 2014 until they fixed this.
No, I didn't roll it back. What a pain. I don't even know how I would do that at this point, you know? I mean, it is Adobe just sends out the updates they want me to have, and it would take some investigating, which would probably take more time on figuring out how to roll back to 2014 than just fixing the issue inside the app, you know?
So
I also have a friend, Jaron, a fellow photographer here in the Bay Area. He's I think he's gone to like South America or somewhere. He complained about taking CC with him, and he can't use it if he's not connected. So he actually has to his legitimate copy of CC, like, delete it and install the pirated versions because those work.
See, that they told us, or at least it was my understanding, that CC only needs to ping the server once in a while. So he needs to connect to the internet maybe once a month, and he should be fine.
You have no idea.
But if he's not even able, like, let's say he's doing that and it still won't let him, I mean, that's a major problem.
He prepped this before he left, so he didn't have to worry about it.
And it clearly didn't work.
How long has it been gone?
I have no idea. I just know. He did, I don't know if you saw this, Tony, Ride North, where him and his buddy took, this is his previous project, and it was like the number one most biggest post on Imgur, Jaron, last year for 2014. I believe it was him. It was on Twitter that he mentioned this. And I said, that's interesting because before I had a legitimate copy of CC, I have more problems with it than I did when it was illegitimate.
That's absurd. I'm sorry. If anyone from Adobe does listen to this podcast, which I doubt they do, but if they do, this is beginning to make me upset. And I am a really huge proponent of what you do. And the fact that I can't access I'm doing it right now. I can't access my CC panel. Stupid. It's just stupid. I was able to access it yesterday.
Have you contacted them?
I mean,
they actually got pretty good tech support. I've contacted them for some issues, and they actually do pretty well. They can take control of your computer, and they fix it for you. You just sit there and watch. It's pretty good.
This is true. I'm with Tony on this. I have had to experience that when I had issues, Jaron, when I first got my legitimate copy, and I was like, why is not my legitimate copy?
Well, the thing is, I can't ever gauge my experience as being what normal people get, because as press, I get like funneled to the top and get treated really well anyway. So it's really hard for me to say whether or not this is like normal behavior for them. So I've always gotten great service out of Adobe.
It's like hashtag first world problems. Yeah.
Well, I just dropped Jaron's name, and I usually get funneled right to the top too. So maybe that's why. I don't know.
I got to try that some more sometime.
Anyway, so there's that.
That's why Rosin's a pro here. Bigger pro, I should say.
Whatever the case may be, there is one thing that is absolutely certain. Waiting over a month and a half to fix a basically program-breaking bug is absurd.
It took a lot longer than needed.
How did they not catch that in QR?
Or at least give us a chance to roll back. If there's an easy way to do it, I'd love to
there
know
is
that.
Actually, and it's because Adobe isn't actually particularly great at this. Unless you told it to, it generally won't uninstall older versions. So your computer tends to get bogged down with a ton of versions of Adobe applications. Like if I look in right now, I have all the way back to CC still on my computer. I see CS5 over here.
Yeah, I take those off.
Clean it up, Jaron. Yeah, I uninstalled that crap.
Well, the thing is, computer's still working. Hey,
if I did uninstall these, I probably wouldn't have been able to do any Photoshop for the last month and a half. So you guys,
what were you using? CC 2014 or CS6 or
2014? I don't go that far back.
Okay.
I mean, what is this? Communist Russia?
I'm using Photoshop 5.5, bro.
All right. So anyway, speaking of like upgrading and stuff
in Russia. Russia Photoshops you.
Speaking of not something wanting to like upgrade, there was a video that a filmmaker, he sounds like he's British.
Nice. He is English.
English.
I can vouch
English,
for
English, English.
Simon Cade.
He did a video where he talks about how he has a Canon T3i and has absolutely zero intention of upgrading. And I think his heart is in the right place in this video. And you can watch the video. It'll be in the show notes. But Tony, what do you think about this idea of steadfastly saying that he's not going to upgrade his gear? He just doesn't want to do it.
I think that's insane. I think that you got to upgrade A because you want the latest technologies to give you more tools to work with when you're trying to create content. And you also need to be able to stay competitive in the marketplace. So what's he going to do if he gets a call from a client that wants 4K?
He'll rent it, right?
Yeah, he says he'll rent if that's the case. So one of his arguments is for the cost of purchasing new equipment, like say he wants the A7S, that's the one that he was referring to, he could make a film for the cost of that camera, and he would rather go make that film.
And he cares more about the storytelling and storytelling abilities than
the gear,
what his equipment can and cannot do.
Yeah.
He needs to raise his rates so that his equipment should be a non-concern. If you're creating content in a professional environment, the cost of your equipment is just a tool for doing business. You know, that's part of the cost. So
I'm willing to bet he doesn't actually do that much work like that. I don't think he does commercial work. I bet he just like makes
movies.
But
he's just a filmmaker. Yeah, Tony. He doesn't do any stills or anything like
so
that.
So his perspective is a little warped.
Yeah. You know, so let me rephrase. If you're using the tools professionally, if you're using them to earn a living, then the cost of those tools should be, of course, an expense that you take into account when you do your cost of doing business and when you come up with your rates and what you're going to charge your clients, et cetera.
I think, Tony, that's a very professional business response, and I don't knock that at all. That is absolutely a correct response. The way he words his response, at least in the video, it's very much, as Jaron just said, it's like a hobbyist type of approach, where I don't think he is being paid, or if he's not, he doesn't have super huge jobs where it's a, say, a fair business expense just to get like a second reliable camera and making, yeah.
Yeah, then that makes sense. I mean, if you're a hobbyist and you're out there, no reason you shouldn't be renting gear. Why drop a bunch of money? And you're never going to keep up with the latest and greatest stuff. So find something that works, that you can accomplish, you know, 90% of what it is that you're trying to do. And when you have a specific need, rent that gear or borrow it or, you know, upgrade annually to something, you know, a piece of glass or a body or whatever it is that you need, rather than trying to keep on top of it all the time.
I think that this video has the best message to the folks that keep telling themselves that if they only had this one more piece of gear, they would be just as good as this idol that they worship. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is who he might be speaking mostly to. For those of us who, like for me, example, when I bought...
Keeping up with the Joneses.
When I bought my Ronin M.
Or the Jarens.
I made the money back on that Ronin in one job.
Right.
That's awesome.
And so now everything that I paid for it, and that thing makes my work better. Now I'm very, very selective when I go out and I buy like lenses and cameras, because I'm thinking to myself, is this really making it that I needed this? Like, couldn't I have shot this with what I already had? Probably. Like, I don't need new glass anymore. Like, I can't think of a time I'm going to buy new optics. Like, Tony was telling me he's really, really a big fan of, what are they? The Vedra lenses?
Mm-hmm.
For microphone.
Yeah, he loves those. And I'm like, I would get them if I wasn't getting outstanding performance out of what I already have.
Now, see, I didn't have anything. So I got, when we had that conversation about the GH4 and I purchased it, I didn't have lenses yet. So I had Canon lenses and I bought the speed boosters, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I used those and they were okay, but I came across the Vedras about the same time. So I ended up returning the speed boosters and bought the Vedras in their place. I was still within, you know, the return policy or whatever when I bought the speed boosters. And I like the Vedras better actually than putting SLR lenses on the GH4.
And that
so it was different because I wasn't changing or upgrading. It was just starting from scratch.
Exactly.
So.
And that I think is a really key point. Like for me, I'm super comfortable with what I'm using. All of the stuff that's in my bag is in a very specific pocket. I know where everything is and I can react quickly to situations. So for me, it's less important to buy certain things. But if you're just starting out, then yeah, you should be shopping around and looking about it a little bit.
Yeah. I want to interject as well here, Jaron, because I very much take his message to heart for me. Because I'll be the first to put my hand up and say, I've been there. I've been the gear whore, and I did that. And now, like, I've been paring down and simplifying ever since. And I'm always just trying to get, like, I mean, part of this is, like, I'm very proud to buy used gear. Like, you know, my lenses are used. I think I only bought one lens that was that was brand new. Otherwise, I'll look hunt on like Amazon Warehouse, Fred Miranda buy and sell forums, Craigslist, you know, just to get whatever I can, the cheapest I can, so that my dollar can stretch that much more and I can get either further or better things down the line. Because it's, I don't know, like Tony says, it's a business, it's bottom line. And these are tools. At the end of the day, when I get buried, I don't want to be buried in my crap.
Yeah.
No, you know, the thing about it, people ask,
but you better
time,
keep my like on me.
What should I, you know, which lights should I buy? Which camera should I buy? Well, what are you using now is usually my question. And then they tell me and I ask them, well, what's wrong with that one? How is it limiting, you know, what you're trying to accomplish? And I think that that's the problem. People get sucked into wanting to buy, you know, they see, you know, Peter Coulson or Rob Graham or Caramander, whoever their idol is, buying, using a certain camera or lighting or whatever, and they want to have that because they want to create images like that.
And they think the problem is the only way to do it is to get exactly what he has.
Right. They don't realize what the limitations or see even the difference between what they currently have and what those can do. And I think that's the time to upgrade. When you can understand the limitations for the gear that you are currently using and it's impairing you from being able to create the content that you want to, that's the time to upgrade, whether you're a professional or a hobbyist.
That right there is an excellent place to like close that, because that is perfect.
No, I got one more.
Do you? You can.
I got one more. Yeah, so like I always remember this theory, and it doesn't apply just to photography or videography, but just in anything you kind of buy in life, that if you – I kind of generally – do you guys read the wirecutter.com or the Sweet Home, where they just kind of review a bunch of stuff and just say, well, this is the best of this category. Like I bought my washer and dryer for the house here. I selected it based off of the reviews off of that website.
What is it?
Because I didn't want to spend time. Thewirecutter.com.
I'm checking it out.
And then they have a sister site called thesweethome.com, which is where I found the reviews of, because like our washer and dryer died, right? So that's like the most boring thing to research, but yet we need it, right? So for me the idea is like, all right, just go to the website. They do all the work. I trust them, and I did buy what they were recommending, and we love it in this home, you know, that with their recommendations. But I've done, I don't know, a swim goggles, swim caps, like little things like. That's what I find, and I love that. But the point I'm trying to make here is that usually if you can't like get something or afford something and you're trying to emulate someone else, if you just know like, well, the industry standard is, I don't know, pocket wizards for remote strobes, you know, to fire them, but I don't have the money for that. So what you should do, don't ever buy like the medium range. Buy the goddamn cheapest thing you can find. Like, get, basically what I'm trying to say is, if you can't get the best, get the cheapest and then try and get it used. that's what I do. That's exactly what I do. Because I'm like, if I can't afford the best, I'll afford the cheapest,
and then get it used.
And because I think there's a you kind of like I think we all eventually upgrade gear over time, right? And so if you've already started with the cheapest, and yeah, fine, it breaks or whatever, then it's, you're not out that much, and you've learned enough with the basics of that gear. Yeah, especially if you've got it used, and if you learn so much about it, because the whole point is it's a learning experience as well. And then you understand why it is that that is the industry standard, and therefore you can understand the investment put into that. That's all I wanted to say.
Make sure you get it used.
Buy it used.
Get it used.
Buy it used. Yeah, that's all.
All right. The last thing that was sort of a news item that I wanted us to talk about was that there was this algorithm written by they're image scientists. I would imagine. I think they're students. If they're not students, they're like close to being students, because it looks like this is taken out of school. They created an algorithm that is capable of separating reflections from let me describe the situation. You're taking a picture out a window, and you actually, when you take a look at the photo, you actually see yourself before you see the actual background. This algorithm is able to pull the reflection out and just give you the clean background. It can also, if you're like shooting through a fence, like a wire fence, it can recognize what's the wire fence and immediately remove that through science. So I was looking at this, I'm like, oh, that's cool, and completely like I would never use this. I can't see like a,
unless it was like a feature in Lightroom where you just like dehaze,
right? Okay, that's a perfect example, because when dehaze was announced, I was like, this seems so stupid.
And then you took some night shots. Well, and like, whoa.
So I don't know if either of you saw it, but I took a picture of Mount Jefferson last week while I was at the base of Mount Hood, and I dehazed that shot. And man, does it look good. It's probably the best landscape photo I've ever taken. So dehaze does work. So that's a great example. But me looking at this, I can't. Maybe it's because their examples are so pedestrian to me. Like I can't figure out when I would actually find this useful. Tony.
Yeah, I gotta agree with Karen Pender on this. If it was built into, you know, Capture One or one of the pieces of software that I'm actively using, and it was a matter of, you know, press a button, make a slider happen, and voila. But what they showed, you know, I felt like an idiot watching their video thing, because they got pretty in depth. And I'm like, I don't have any idea what they're talking about here. There's a reason I'm not an engineer and I'm a photographer. But do you have to take multiple shots, or do you have to start with a video, or what? It was really weird, because I kind of understand what they're doing. They're taking a shot on the left side,
video
on the right side, and then the shot in the middle can use the image from the left and right to make up the missing data in the middle, basically, is how it works, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's video. Is that what you're saying, Caramander?
Yeah, they're taking the information from video. So not just one frame, like multiple frames, mm-hmm. where, you know, certain things don't change in the frame. Certain things do change. And that's how they're able to, using the algorithm,
right,
figure out what are the two images.
So are you saying that this actually might have video applications? Can it do this for a moving image?
I'm telling you, from what I'm watching from the video, it's only for video.
Well, the way I understood it was you use video to capture, but then it actually does the effect on a still image.
That's
right.
What I thought. If it did live in video, that would be enormous, actually.
Yeah, I want that in camera.
If you want to fix your reflections when you do that, just use a polarizer.
Well, okay.
that's a Canon life-changing tip from me.
Right. But like, what if I wanted,
call back to last
what if
week.
I wanted to get rid of the fence, though, and decide, well, I actually think this video chat would be better without that fence. And in live working video,
it just sounds like there'll be hella processing, because right now what they're doing is they're using the video as input footage and output is a still.
Right. I mean, if we still can't get Morph Cut right, I'm not entirely certain that we're going to get this right anytime soon. But it's a cool concept if it was definitely a video. Now suddenly I'm intrigued.
Yeah,
you know how we have expanding resource divisions? We have now, we have travel.resource.
Yeah.
Or resource.travel,
sorry. Yeah, and we're coming up with a couple others, but we're not announcing them yet. But
we're not announcing them. Nothing like wedding.resource, I suppose. Anything like that. But you know what? If we had voodoo.resource, this would go in there. Voodoo. Along with Lytro.
Voodoo.
Along with I don't know. Like, I feel like Microsoft has all these different lab like projects like Photosynth, where you just like just swing it around your phone around you, and then you have this 3D place you can walk through. Yeah, but voodoo.resource.
That's not a bad idea, actually.
Yeah, it's like it's all voodoo. It'd be like the least read part of the site, but it would have the most technical inputs.
You have to have a PhD to access it.
You guys remember when hyperlapsing was announced, and then it was like this video like this, very technical, and then like the following day, Instagram's like, well, here's an app. Because I'm sure they were working on it already. Yeah. And it just so happened the timing of like Microsoft publishing here's what a hyperlapse is. And remember?
Yeah. And
so that
Instagram's
would, that
so
would
much
fall
more
in here.
Easy to understand when they did it.
Instagram's like, here's your app. Hit record. There you go. Yeah. Go live your life.
Anyway.
That was good.
So there's that. Right. There's an algorithm that may or may not actually be useful, but it's cool. I'm glad that science is still expanding in the realm of photo and video.
Yay, science.
So with that behind us, let's talk to Tony a little bit. So we're going to pick his brain on a couple issues.
Let's probe Tony.
All right.
So
sounds
Tony,
like a party.
You just got a new studio, right? You just started it. Why don't you give us your little bit of an intro and like, how would you like, so let's say I'm thinking about it. My business is getting bigger. I no longer want to work out of my living room. How would I go about, what are the steps that I take to find a studio? What should I be looking for? What should I be looking out for? Just give us your quick and dirty. Walk us through it.
All right. So this is the one I just signed a lease for, is like my fifth or sixth studio. I don't know what I'm on now, but so I've made a lot of trial and error mistakes in trying to find a studio space. And of course, this is going to be different for every person and their shooting style, their genre, their area that they're in, and of course, budget more than anything. And I think that finding something within your budget is the first and foremost in this whole process, is figuring out what your budget is so you have a starting point. You don't start finding all these really cool spaces that you can't afford. Right.
How do you even start looking? Like, did you have a real estate agent? Did you just start Craigslisting?
If you drive around a little bit and just kind of get an idea for your area and what areas in your town that you would want to be in. Obviously, there's some sketchy areas that anybody could probably afford a space. And then you have your downtown areas that are going to be really expensive. So you have to figure out where most of your clientele are or where they would want to go to, depending on if you're open for walk-in business, et cetera. And then you can start scouring Craigslist. You can try the commercial MLSs. You can get a real estate agent. Although, keep in mind that you're probably not going to get an agent that's going to dedicate a whole lot of time, depending on what your budget is, because they don't stand to make a whole lot of money if you're just starting out for your first studio or something, unless you're getting a gargantuan place. So Craigslist is a good place to start. At least you get an idea for what the market is and what the budget that you need to have to get into a space that would fit your needs. And you may find that you have to take a step back and reset and wait a little bit longer until your revenue increases before you can get into a place. Because I can speak from experience that finding a studio that is restrictive is going to drive you more crazy than not having one at all. You know,
what do you mean by restrictive?
Well, explain it.
Low ceilings, so you can't get your lights, or too narrow. You know, people will
physically restrictive.
Yeah, people will get a space in an office building or something like that, you know, with drop ceilings, and it's a narrow room. You can't even have light stands out on the side, whatever. Or the only place you can afford is in a sketchy area that nobody wants to go to, or you get broken into and people steal all your stuff, you know, because it's in a bad area, whatever. So you're going to be happier if you just wait until you can find the right spot than just trying to jump into something just to have something.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So when you picked this space, were you on this on your own, or did you have help from a real estate agent? Or did you just, because you've done this so many times, you kind of knew what you were looking for?
Yes, all of the above. The space that I was in, and this is really the deal, is my crew has grown. So now I have, I was telling you guys before the podcast, I just hired a marketing guy. And so I'm going to have somebody there full time doing that. I have an assistant, and then I have a second shooter that works with me. So we have a few people, and it starts to get crowded. I was in a space, it was about 1,500 square feet, and it was great. It was in a good area, nice high ceilings, et cetera. But we started expanding the crew, and then we started dabbling into video. And as you guys know, video starts to take up more room. You start to have tracks and dollies and all these other things going on. And so we had to get, we were busting
more
at the
gear.
Seams. Yeah, more gear takes up more room. So we said, we need more space, you know? I got an agent and we started looking around at spots and nothing was coming up. And I actually found the space that I signed the lease on through a client of mine who is an architect I shoot for. And they told me about this space that met my needs just through casual conversation. I went and checked it out and I actually got this space without the agent. But it's perfect. So
just out of curiosity, is this in Spokane or Seattle?
This one is in Spokane.
Okay. And now out of more curiosity, just where in Spokane? Because I just want to get a picture.
Directly across the street from the Davenport Hotel.
Nice.
It's on right downtown on Sprague. It's probably since you've been here, there's a couple of restaurants.
Tony's secret lair has been exposed.
Yeah.
That's right. One is, so if you come up, Jaron, we'll give you the tour. Maybe we'll do a podcast from the studio or something. But So what I was looking for, and the reason it's hard to find, is because as a photographer, I don't want support pillars everywhere. That's one of the main things. When you find a space with high ceilings or that's big enough for you, there's usually support pillars everywhere. And those are a nightmare when you're trying to build a big set or shoot video or anything. So finding a place with no support pillars is, you know, objective one. Then finding a space with high enough ceilings that you can raise your lights up, get over top of a set, whatever. That's another element that I have to look for. Mm. Parking is always an issue, especially in a metropolis area, like where you guys are in the Bay Area, trying to find a space where people can actually park, or you can park and get your gear in and out of the studio if you need to. I shoot a lot of food, so we wanted to have a place that I could have a kitchen put into. So, you know, there's a lot of different things, depending on what you're looking for, that you have to take into account.
Yeah. So you were like, your short term was, we need a bigger space. Your long term was, I need all this other stuff too.
Right. Which, you know, I can find a bigger space, but finding the bigger space with all those other elements is where it gets tricky, you know?
I think for anyone who's just starting to get into this, it might be easy to get so focused on that short term as like the idea you need to just get it now and not really think too hard about what's necessary in the future and find yourself in a space that you're going to grow out of way faster than you really, really want to. And back find yourself back searching again way too soon.
Yeah, and that's a problem that I've had. I've even had clients mention it like, oh, you're moving again, because I've moved, in the last 5 years, I think I've moved 5 times, and that's way too much. It's not good for business to be moving around that much,
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's good to know. There's a lot of
Do you feel, Tony, do you feel like moving around this much is kind of just, it's you got to update all your what, your Yelp, your Google Maps, the directory listing? I guess you have your marketing guy do that, maybe your assistant.
Yeah, you do have to do all of that, and your bank information, your checks, and all of this stuff. But more than that, it's just that people wonder why you're moving around so much.
Yeah, you're not making any money, Tony. Do you have to keep, the rent getting too
Exactly.
high?
Did you get thrown out? What happened? So it starts to be, clients start to wonder, and they want someplace consistent. They want to be able to
Yeah, they want
know where you
consistency.
are, where they can go and find you. They don't want to have to hunt you down when they need you. So.
Yeah, you
You know
running
how you
from
have
them?
that, like, sorry, go on.
No, that was it. It's just like, are you running from them? Trying to hide
I
from
don't
them?
know.
Right.
I was thinking of Bruce Lee, like flow like water. But for your clients, Tony, it's more like be like McDonald's, because
Yeah,
they don't
everywhere.
go anywhere. Yeah. Well, they don't go anywhere. They just set up shop and boom, they're there.
So, anyway, so, getting back to the root of the question on, how to find a studio and things to consider is you got to weigh all of that stuff, how you shoot, where you see yourself going in the future, and try to find a space that is going to allow you to grow, in the direction that you want to grow, and not just to get into something so that you can say, I have a studio. It's not going to be beneficial in the long run.
Right on. So, building on this, you mentioned that you shoot just in that alone. You shoot video, you shoot food, you shoot architecture, and I think the thing that you might be most well known for, thanks to your RGGEDU videos, you shoot products. Those are four very, very different things, and yet you're excelling at all of them. So I think you found. Can you explain what your original niche was, how you found it, and then how you expanded from there to get all of these other businesses running, so that makes you basically a powerhouse in your area?
I have a theory on how he does it, though.
What's your theory?
He's got a secret twin, like the Prestige. And so that guy also does stuff too.
That's
And then
right.
Tony does stuff, but it's only like one entity. I just gave it away.
Yeah,
Boom. Cool.
don't for anyone who
Have a
hasn't seen the
secret
Prestige,
twin.
well, there you have
Oh,
it.
sorry. Spoiler alert.
Cloning, yep, that's it. So Caramander's right. That's it. So my first topic. No, we
Okay.
okay,
That's
so
good.
I shoot product, food, and architecture. And if you break it down in its simplest form, architecture and food are basically products, right? Architecture is just a giant product. Food is essentially a still thing that isn't moving a whole lot. The downside is food does get gross much quicker than your
Yeah,
normal product. So,
changes more than a
yeah.
watch does.
Yeah,
Changes not that
exactly.
much.
So, there is that element there. But in essence, I'm not shooting anything with people in it. And I tried that. I started out, finding your niche is comprised of a couple things, at least for me. One was what I'm passionate about. It wasn't weddings. I shot weddings, I shot babies and bellies and all these other things for a while. I hated it. I did not like it. It didn't get me out of bed in the morning. What I did get excited about was shooting products. And that's what I found was getting the most response from friends and family and clients and anybody that I talked to. They were really responding to those images a lot more than the other stuff. So I said, well, maybe there's something here, I should look deeper into. And as I started latching onto that genre, I dropped the other stuff and just really concentrated on that, which a lot of people struggle with that concept of not, specializing. They don't want to pigeonhole themselves into one thing. They want to be able to take anything that comes along. But I don't know if that's helping people or hurting them, really.
I think that Caraminder and I would agree that it hurts you and your career to try and do everything.
Yeah.
We actually usually encourage people to like specialize, which is why it's so,
Pare down,
yeah,
focus,
it's
right.
so interesting, because I think, at least I don't know about you, Cameron, you can come in on this a little bit, but I think food and architecture and product, I see what you're saying, and they're being basically a similar concept, but the way that you light and treat each takes greater understanding than just one or the other. Like if I was a food photographer and I that's all I knew, and then I tried to go shoot a building, I would probably screw it up. So
Well,
you
I
have an
think
understanding.
people want,
Think of it this way.
I'd make people want to eat the building.
If you're shooting a building, a brick building, right? There's a lot of brick buildings here in the Northwest. To get the texture and things to come out, you need to light it from the side. So you get kind of a side light, which brings out texture in a surface. It's the same way with food. It's the same way with a product. So it's the same concept there. You know, if you think about it and you break them down in their simplest forms, they're not as different as you think. You know, it's really all about bringing out texture and shape. And we do that for all three of those genres, you know.
Hey, I do that with people too.
Yeah, you could, the difference is there, you have a dynamic subject, much more dynamic even than food. And that is a part that I don't like. I like to be able to step back and concentrate on something and what my last shot looked like. And sometimes I'll stare at it for 10 minutes before I grab another frame. You can't do that with a person. They're going to fall asleep.
No, there's a lot more psychology involved. Right. They are going to fall asleep. Fortunately, none of my clients have fallen asleep. So I'm doing okay.
So,
but no, Tony, I have a question for you. When you talked about, like, when you started sharing your product photography images, and you said that that resonated more with people, I kind of have this, maybe it's a I don't know what you call it, like a hokey pokey or hooey fooey thing, where because you love to do something and it shows, whether it is a vibe in the work that just comes out or whether it is that this is just you're in your element and you put it out there, and people can feel that or they see that, or I don't know if it's even quantifiable, but I don't know, speak to that. What do you think? I don't know, is it hokey pokey? Like, that's what I think. That's what I believe.
No, and there's some truth to that. And of course, the stuff that you're passionate about, the work is probably going to be better in that area as well, which is kind of goes along with what you're saying. People are going to respond better to that stuff. You're steering the ship that way, to be sure. You know, if that's what you like to do, they're going to feel that when they're looking at the images or you're showing your book. But it's still, it doesn't mean that it's any less true, you know, that your work is better in that particular area.
I think it's kind of a currency of how we spend our energy, basically an energy expenditure. The things we are passionate about, we pretty much have a limitless energy for that, whereas things that we're not, we just do it to kind of take care of the bills, like almost like the minimum viable product, like the what is the basically minimum just to make sure my name isn't dragged through the mud, but that is still a good quality piece to put out there, whereas something, you know, being passionate about probably gets a lot more of your energy and attention.
Yeah, and it's true. And
then you're shooting for yourself at that point, probably. You know, you got to meet your own high tastes and standards.
Right. You know, catalog stuff is not exciting. It's not sexy. It pays the bills. We do quite a bit of it. But I certainly am not putting the same energy into a product shot as I would put into a hero shot for some sort of advertisement, you know.
That's kind of how I am. And when a lot of my work, I think, geez, probably 50% of it, I'm being hired as like a second shooter, or I'll be there for assisting or just as a grip. And those are when I'm like, when I wake up in the morning and I'm like, ugh, what, but it pays so well. And I have to like pry myself out of bed and to go do it, when I'll do something for free if I'm like really excited about it and I really want to shoot this.
Rewrap podcasting.
Yeah, like this.
Yeah.
But like any of my documentaries, any of the major stuff that I've done that has gotten me the most traction, because I think that it comes out in the final product is like, wow, this is a really cool thing. I didn't really make that much money on those things. I was doing them because I loved the idea.
Yeah, and it happens even when you're taking client jobs too. You'll get a call on a project that you really want to do, and you may compromise your fee a little bit just so that you get the job. You want to make sure you get it because it's a cool project
Jaren
you want to be involved in.
Yeah.
Jaren did
it. What did I do that on? I can't even remember.
I want to say it's Train.
I did.
I compromised my rate on, and they know that too, because they didn't have my original rate, and I compromised because I really wanted to shoot that. Really wanted to shoot my favorite band, and it was so worth it.
There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's okay. You know, I mean, it's art. That's your prerogative as an artist to take the projects that you want. You know,
exactly. There's a reason why I no longer have that cubicle desk job. I chose to do this because I wanted to do it. So once in a while, I'm going to be even more like, I want this really badly, so I'm going to make it happen, and I'm going to do
it. Just can't do it every time. Otherwise, there'll be a reason why you don't have a house anymore either in your box.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Which is why I still do jobs that I'm less excited about, and that happens. But, you know, I do my best to make them as amazing as possible, just because I want to get hired again.
Right, right. So the last piece of that was video, and that's something we just added to the brand this year, and that's really we're doing video in the same genres that we do stills in. Like, I'm not going to go out and shoot a wedding video. I'm not going to go out and shoot a video of someone rock climbing or something like that. We're going to shoot video for to market a product, to market for a restaurant or food, or to market some sort of architecture. Maybe it's a fly through of a building or something like that. So we're sticking with the genres that we do stills for. We've just added video to the brand on those genres.
I'm actually just getting into that particular video myself. Actually, the shoot tomorrow that I have is like only the third or fourth one of this specific thing, but it's an architecture video, and it's specific to like where the client wants to show the transformation of a building before and after a major renovation. And so the way that I'm shooting this is going to be like I'm going to bleed one frame into another. I got to actually mark off spots and do all a lot very different than what I'm used to shooting, which is generally people. I shoot people in working in lifestyle. And shooting buildings is, to me, very different, and I'm kind of excited about it. So,
I don't know. It's. I wish I had your skills. You know, like I said, we just added it to the brand this year.
I wish I had yours.
Yes, stop it.
We're trying to find our way in this stuff.
Now we're just circle jerking.
And it's. I feel like I'm just starting out all over again in photography because you know I don't have any video clients, or I didn't have any video clients, and you got to. You know, you apply for a project or submit your name for a project or whatever, and the first thing they wanted to see is your reel. And it's like, well, just like when you start out in photography, it's like you're showing some junk images that you got, hoping you can get the job, and you're just trying to piece things together until you start getting some traction, you know?
Yeah.
So fortunately, we have a good reputation for stills, and we can use that to try to hit some of those clients for video, you know?
Now, that right there is actually a good point to make sure that's hammered home is if you do something well, even if it's if you're applying for something that you don't normally do, you can use your other work to get more work that's not necessarily the same thing because you're working on reputation. Just make sure that it doesn't wreck that reputation when you try and go out and actually do it.
There's the rub, you know? We just, like that
you could blow
project
it.
The project I called you about, that was for Skechers, and I got that job without having a reel or anything to show them, but they saw my still work and just trusted that I was going to deliver, and, you know, I haven't been sued yet, so hopefully they think I did, so.
I still think one of the best videos I've seen, Tony, that you made that I love, I don't know what your title of the video was, but it was just like, here's the various little accessories that you need and bring on a shoot. I see the thumbnail now. It's on the cart that you have a specially made shelf on. And I've seen a few videos, but like that one was my favorite.
Yeah.
That one I love just because no one's doing this. No one's talking about this little, like, you know, your hard hats for what you're doing.
The grip
but,
kit.
I love that.
Yeah, so those videos are before we added video to the brand, and that was just us trying to learn how to cut stuff together and edit and stuff. So the production quality is poor there, and I would never show that stuff to a client in order to get a job, but it gave us the ability, by doing that work, gave us the experience we needed to work out the kinks and the bugs in our equipment and our processes so that we can actually now attack a professional gig, you know?
Right on.
It's still good. I still enjoyed it. And it's I would recommend people here to watch it. Do you remember the title of it?
A Photographer's Grip Kit or something. I don't know. They're all on my YouTube and Vimeo page. You can find all that stuff on there. So
awesome.
Let's move on. What's the last one? I kind of wanted to just move. Thank you, Tony, for all that. That was a lot of really good information. Appreciate that. We're going to close on a couple things here. First up, Cameron, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Jeremy Cowart's tweets.
Yeah, this is actually just, I don't know, I guess it's not necessarily breaking news. I think a couple hours ago, he just tweeted, he was on a plane, and I think he just, he said hello to his seatmate who didn't say anything back, so he knew he had an awkward few hours to speak. And so he did. And I just, three tweets in particular of his, I don't know, half a dozen tweets that he mentioned, that I just wanted to read and just get our discussions and thoughts about. So first one is, if you want more work, you have to create, parentheses, that's the easy part, close parentheses, and then promote it, parentheses, this is the hard part, end parentheses. The second part is such a necessary evil, saying, you know, the promoting part. I shouldn't say creating is easy, but you get it. It's at least the part we're passionate about. Sorry, it's at least, I guess he mentioned, it's the least part we're passionate about. Sorry, no artist is passionate about marketing, right? And the last one is, if I could go back and do education over, I'd study business, finance, and marketing. That's it. Art and photography was learned out of passion. And so, you know, Tony, you just mentioned you hired a marketing guy.
Yeah, it's not what I'm good at. You know, concentrate on what you're good at. Don't, you know, I could probably do my own graphic design and marketing and build my own websites and do all of this other stuff. But there's people who are professionals at that. It's like clients, they're trying to do their own photography. You know, it's going to look like I tried to do it myself. So
some people have a really, really hard time admitting they don't know how to do something. And I think being able to admit that I'm not great at I'm a terrible portrait photographer, just terrible. And I don't mind admitting that. I have other people.
This is true. I have seen Jaren do as well. Jaren, you're a great guy.
I'm Jaren. Real bad. See, the thing is.
But also, Jaren, I'm not a video whiz like you are. So let's just make it even.
For example, if someone asked me, can I do portraits? I'd like to hire you to do portraits. I'd be like, well, actually, portraits isn't my specialty. Here's a list of people in cities that I trust to do portraits. Please reach out to them. Like, I'm not going to try and do something I'm not good at. And that falls in the same lines as as this marketing thing. So Jeremy Cowart said was that he wishes he went, if he could go back to school, he'd go to school for marketing and finance and business and stuff. That's what I actually did go to school for. And
hashtag humble brag.
Now I'm doing what makes me happy. And so I kind of already did what he's suggesting people do. And I can back that up and say, yeah, absolutely do that. That's a great way to make sure that you're around it. Your education is really rounded. You're not focused so heavily on learning one thing that you are, and it was only later 50% of what you needed in the real world.
That's where most people fail, in my opinion. That's where they fail in photography, is they can do, they're great photographers, but the world will never know about them because they're horrible marketers, you know, or they'll never get the business because they're not good at marketing. I have a friend who's a phenomenal, phenomenal photographer, but he is horrible at marketing himself and knocking on doors and getting clients, and his website is archaic and he struggles because of it. And it's like, gosh, if you could just get somebody to handle that part of the ship for you, you would do so well, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what I've done, taking my own advice, and I hired somebody to handle that stuff for me.
That way you can just focus on taking pictures, right?
Yeah. You know, really, it comes down to time. I just don't have time. I don't have time to stay up on social media and everything else that needs to be done, you know?
And let's say you did have the time to do it, that you were going to dedicate some time to it. I still think that if it's not what you're best at, you're going to end up not getting your own money's worth out of it. When you could just as easily pay someone at what you would pay yourself or less to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, I see stuff, promos. I read a blog called No Plastic Sleeves, and it's photographer promos, right? Some of the best. They pull them, they talk about them, that, you know, it's from art buyers or art directors that get these promos from photographers, and they look at them. Of course, I'm talking commercial here. Some of them are phenomenal. It's like, how did you come up with that? In a million years, I wouldn't have come up with that, you know? So I want somebody that has that mind that can do that for me, you know, take my images and market them to people who need them.
Right on.
Yeah, I'm. Before I got into photography, I started businesses. That's what I did when I was 21. I started my first online business, and I've been doing that kind of ever since I picked up a camera of 2012, 2011. And you know what? Even though I have the business background and I've created businesses, it's harder to do as a photographer, and I don't know why. And I'm still struggling with it. Still trying to, you know, get better at it as well. And I come from that background. Like, that's what I was self-taught in it. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's my theory is left brain, right brain. I don't even know if that's a proper, like, complex. But, you know, you stick to the creative stuff. You focus on that. And then your analytical business side, which I think is the other side of the brain, I guess. That's where I struggle for more. But if I just focused on the business side, then I know my creativity is
you're saying you're only capable of using like one area of yourself at a time.
Yes, as Tony has earlier said, I think before we were recording, I guess I'm a bit half retarded that way.
I was referring to me, not to you.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I know you weren't referring to me, but I'm gonna adopt it as well. Like, you know, it's not. I'm the first to admit I'm better at doing things one focused task at a time, not like multitasking. Because I just do better at that, just focusing on one thing rather than spreading out myself thin. And it's just that's what it is. It's just kind of switching gears. And I know people who can do that really well, that they can switch gears very good and very quickly. I just wish I was like that. That's a talent more than a skill.
people that are just getting started, I think they need to have some help with marketing because they're going to undervalue their work. It's hard to make that transition going from hobbyist to professional, where all of a sudden you wake up and people are paying you to do something you would have done for free the day before, you know, and making sure that you're charging enough for that, that it's a viable business so that you can earn a living on it and so that you're not driving down the market in your area. So having somebody else that can determine what the value is for what it is that you're doing is not a bad thing necessarily.
All right, Kiermina, this last bit here is, I think what you added this, you wanted to talk to Tony about something. So
yeah, I just noticed as we were recording that Tony flashed up a device that I have as well that Jaren does not have yet. And Jaren is the biggest watch guy amongst us. But yeah, Tony, you got an Apple Watch there.
Yeah, I'm not wearing pants, but I'm wearing an Apple Watch. So it's good, man. This is they can't see us, right? Good.
So, not this episode.
No, I do. I love the, you know, I got it originally. I thought, okay, this is kind of, first of all, let me back up. When it was introduced, I was like, no way, never getting one, silly. Then when I got it, I was like, all right, it's an expensive novelty thing. It's probably going to be kind of cheesy. I love the thing, man. I can't, if yeah. I don't have it on, I go nuts because I use it all the time. I mean, when I'm shooting.
Can I ask you, yeah. Are you fitter because of it? Are you like just healthier, fitter? When?
Because I have to run it to and from the charger all the time.
No. I have no problems with battery life.
The battery life sucks, but everything else about it is awesome. You know, I had a Fitbit before this, dude. So I was using the Fitbit. I was already, you know, watching steps and things like that. So I wouldn't say that this did that. But what it does is I'm on my phone a lot less. So when I want to shoot,
yes,
it'll buzz. I'll look and see what it was. And then I go back to the shoot again. And, I don't have to stop and check email or open up my phone or whatever to see if it was something important or not. Because, you know, maybe
we don't get derailed.
Right. Exactly. It keeps me on track a lot more, which I thought, because having such easy access to it, it would derail me more than it does. But it's exactly the opposite. Wow. You agree?
I'm with you.
It sounds like you guys are exactly on the same page here. Like, those are the things that Kiermina's been saying.
Yeah. So what are you waiting
Better
for?
With it than without it. Better with it than without
it. So the reason I don't have an Apple Watch is because, actually, I'll show you right here. My watch recently broke, which is really sad. But so this is my favorite watch. This is a mechanical manual wind watch. And I like watches because I like the artistry that goes into making something like this. And the fact that it's really old technology that is still incredibly accurate and hasn't changed much in the last 150 years means something to me. Like, I like wearing art on my wrist. I can see the appeal of the Apple Watch, but when I choose to wear a watch, I really like the idea of wearing, you know, one of these. I need to get the band replaced because the little sprocket that keeps the band in, like, it actually sheared. I was at the airport last week, and I was like taking it off to put it in the box, and it just like exploded. And I looked at the little piece, and it had sheared down the side out of just being old and tired and used. So, I mean, it's a cheap fix, but.
TSA pre-check. You don't have to take your watch off.
I know. I don't travel. I mean, I probably do travel enough to do this, but I haven't signed up for it yet.
Yeah, you got to do it. Super easy.
Flying again.
But, Jaren, I like how you appreciate like the older mechanical engineering. I got a steam engine in the back that I can lend to you, along with a horse and carriage that you can use to get around.
I've got an old film camera. You can shoot with that instead.
Let me grow a mustache and wear a bowler hat, and then I can put that around my neck, and then I can live.
8mm video, Jaren. Right. It's the wave of the future.
Yeah, and I'll take that steam engine and replace my car's engine with it. That way I can be real. That's not the point. So the thing is, I probably will at one point get an Apple Watch, but right now, for me, we were just talking about this earlier. I purchase things if I can see the return on investment for me. And I would consider the watch purchase to be a business expense for me. Like, do I need this to run my business? Will this help my business? Mm-hmm. And right now, I actually don't want that watch. When I'm shooting video especially, I don't want anything to distract me. My phone is not in my pocket. My phone is in my gear bag off. So that when I'm shooting, I'm shooting. I don't want anything else.
There's a button on the watch for that. It's called airplane mode.
Okay, wonderful. Still, I just like you. Seriously, now I'm getting ganged up on here. Jesus.
Just, Jaren, like I understand. I hear you out. Like, you don't want to be distracted. You don't even hear the tap on your wrist as you're flying your DJI Ronin M across the stage to your recording train. Right. I get that. I hear you. And you can just very quickly put on airplane mode, don't be disturbed, right. And go on as you please. So,
I mean, like I said, I might get one eventually. We'll see. I'm not an early adopter of this kind of tech either. I still use my iPhone 5S. I have a 6 Plus. It's right here. It's off. I only use it for one or two things. I don't use it every day. It's too big.
PC rules dictate that we have to say that it was lent to you.
Right. I mean, it's an Apple product that Apple has sent to me because they wanted me to use it. And I do. I use it for my work. I use this as my monitor for my GH4. If you haven't tried that yet, Tony, try it. It is amazing because you get to control the entire camera from your iPhone. So if you're flying this thing and you don't want to actually touch the camera because it's on a gimbal, all your controls are here. It's worth it. But so it's like I said, I don't go with the new tech constantly. I'll adopt eventually. I will probably get the next version of the iPhone because I always get the S version. I'm always one behind, and I'm totally happy with that. So I'll get whatever the next version of the Apple Watch is probably. So get off my back, both of you. Okay. All right. Well, that is going to do it for us. Thank you so much for joining us, Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
Your information there on that stuff that a lot of us don't think about until it's too late was really helpful. The studio thing and you know, finding your niche and expanding was really nice. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, gents. I appreciate it. Hopefully, I didn't ramble too much on those topics.
No, I think we ramble more than you do on a regular basis.
No, I was good with the level of rambling. That was acceptable.
Tony, what is your social stuff? So you say you don't do it, but if someone wants to talk to you on Instagram or Twitter, do you have a handle there?
I do everything right now, and it's Tony Roseland on everything. I just quit the Facebook, but I still have a Facebook business page.
Right on.
Instagram is the biggest outlet for us. I haven't got on board, Cameron, or I know you're a big Snapchat guy. I haven't got on board with that yet. It's still 13-year-old girls thing for me. I can't get past that. And then Twitter. Yeah, we'll dive into it, man. I think it's something we got to do. Trying to stay on top of all this is exactly why we hired someone to handle it, because I just don't have the time to investigate all this stuff. But Tony Roseland on everything. You can find me.
Right on. Go follow Tony, and also make sure if you're interested in product photography, his tutorial from RGEDU is probably the best one out there right now. So I would recommend checking that out as well. Sales pitch done.
Yeah.
And thank you for joining.
Make sure you watch his outtakes, by the way. You'll really get a sense of who Tony is.
There's also like a good solid hour where something like falls off of the stage and breaks behind him in this podcast interview that he did with Rob Grimm, too. That's on YouTube. That's a good conversation, and you can sit there waiting in suspense for something to break. That's great. Thanks for joining us, guys. If you got any comments or questions, you can reach us on Twitter at Rewrap Podcast, and always at resource.photography and at rewrap@resourcemagonline.com. If you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes, subscribe, send us Twitter love, and tell your friends to give us a listen. We would really appreciate it. As always, I am at Jaron Schneider. He's at Karen Minder. He's at Tony Roseland. And this has been the Rewrap Podcast. We will see you all here next week.